3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Happy Freight Friday. What are you guys drinking today? I have a fancy Hefeweizen. I can't, you guys can see this thing. Anybody had it? It's delicious. I love Hefeweizens. Happy Friday. I heard it's beautiful weather almost all over the country. So I hope everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's happy to talk about the law today. But we are today. We're going to talk about trucking accidents and insurance and litigation because it impacts all of our lives. We have, give me one second. I want to see who's in the crowd for us. Let's see. We have Matt Fink is with us. Hi, Matt. I love Matt. Amanda Miller is with us. We love Amanda Miller. I heard she has a birthday coming up. Amanda, you should drop the link for your donation, your like pet donation thing of fun that you want to do, and everybody can donate, and we can meet your goal that you posted on Facebook. Robert's in the house. Peter's in the house. Charles Lung's in the house. I'm so excited, and maybe we'll get lucky, and Butter Bread will show up today. All right. We have to thank our sponsors for making this show happen today, along with our amazing guests. So first sponsor is JJ Keller. They are trucking consultants. So you will call JJ Keller, who's been around forever. They're based out of Wisconsin. They have 150 consultants across the country. I've known them my whole career. They will help you with anything related to trucking. So if you want to know how to better onboard your drivers, hire your drivers, manage training, ELDs, paper tracking, back anything you think of, safety plans, audits, they've got your resource that you need. So that's JJ Keller. The other sponsor you guys all know is my favorite factoring company, OTR Capital, based out of Atlanta, who we love. We love them because they are honest, they are real, they have back support, admin support for all of our carriers and brokers, by the way, who want factoring. No hidden fees, no termination problems. They're a good group of people. They'll be here in the crowd, so you guys can say hello to them. Y'all know that Grace is always on my show. And then we have Swan Leap. For all of you who are working with clunky old software, your TMS is clunky and old, and I know a lot of you out there, Swan Leap is your solution. Click on the link in there. You get 6 months free through Madtropolis, and they will take good care of you. I love Swan Leap. They're flexible. They're already integrated with a lot of your shippers, and they have really good reporting. So let's get started with our amazing guests. I'm so excited we were able to bring these folks on board, and some of these folks are new faces. So welcome to the show, you guys. Hopefully I unmuted all of you. Zeke is all over everything. Adam, you may be the one who will have to mute and unmute because I think you might have an echo because I keep hearing myself. So you may be the one, I don't know. But Adam, you're going to be, oh, maybe you're not. You have earbuds in. Maybe
I've got AirPods in. I shouldn't be echoing. I hope not.
Maybe it's, could be D. Okay, so Adam.
Is it me?
I have no idea, but you look nice with the plant in the background.
Thank you.
D, why don't you go first and introduce yourself to everybody because you are new to Madtropolis, but your company is not.
Yes. So we are the sister company of OTR Capital, but my name is Dee. I'm the claims manager here at Marquee Insurance Group. We are a retail insurance agency specializing in commercial trucking. So my role is pretty much to be an advocate for truckers, just their best friend when they have no other one. So that is what we're here for.
And it's perfect. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on this topic with litigation and claims and insurance. You're a perfect fit into the group. We are excited to have you. I'm going to introduce my favorite plaintiff attorney, which if you asked me 2 years ago, I would have never said those words, would have never came out of my mouth ever. Favorite and plaintiff attorney and friend in the same sentence. But Joe, thank you for coming. Where are you right now? Because you look like you're in like Mexico or someplace beautiful.
Actually, thanks for having me, by the way. You know, I love your show and everything that you're doing. I think you're
you're bringing an important voice to an industry that needs it. And so I want to start off by saying that. Now, I'm in Atlanta today, but this hopefully, this is a picture I took earlier this week, and it's where I hope to be spending a whole lot more time soon, down in near Sarasota, Florida.
Very nice. Did you root for the Tampa? Oh God, I try to pretend that I know football, but I don't.
I did, but we won't do football today. I'm more an SEC college football guy anyway. So
I like to get people riled up in the crowd. And then we have Adam. Adam, you are new to Madtropolis. You are a Texan. We're excited to have you. Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, well, thank you, Cassandra. Thanks for having me on. You have a great show.
I love it.
I do. I'm sorry. Don't hold it against me. it's great to meet you. Great to be on the show. I can't tell you how important this issue is to our industry. I look forward to the opportunity to talk with everybody that's on the show with us today, as well as comments from the rest of the group. My name is Adam Blanchard. I'm based in San Antonio, Texas. Our company is Double Diamond Transport. I grew up in Amarillo, Texas. So that's probably why I sound like a redneck. So please excuse me for that. But also am very involved with the Texas Trucking Association. And I know our topic today is on one of the bills that we're in support of in Austin. So I'm looking forward to getting into it and seeing what we can do to inform everybody about the efforts we're making.
Why don't you start off by telling us how this bill came along? Because I read it and there are parts of it that I was like, wow. This is really interesting how this came along.
Well, you know, I think if you've been in the industry, we've had a problem with lawsuit abuse for many, many years. And I think it's evident from just the number of billboards we're seeing on the highway. If you've been hit by a big truck, you know, our insurance costs, as everybody knows, have been increasing at such a drastic rate that it's putting people out of business. And so we had to do something to fix it. We have to fix this problem so that we can keep small businesses going here in Texas. And I was really shocked to hear recently, looking at our insurance renewals, that I'm actually at a strategic disadvantage with my company being headquartered here in Texas instead of some of the surrounding states, and because we are seeing so many lawsuits and so much lawsuit abuse. And so just to give you the big picture of kind of what we've been experiencing here in Texas, and I feel certain it's the same way in the rest of the country, is just the number of lawsuits. And just to start, there are some folks that, you know, there are lawsuits out there certainly that are absolutely legitimate. We support people's access to the court system and want them to be able to receive justice in these cases. But what we're seeing is that there are illegitimate cases that are being brought in Texas. And during the course of those lawsuits, we're seeing two really, really key issues that we need to address. We're hoping to address this session in Austin. The first is the overinflation of medical bills. You know, you get in a truck accident, you got these attorneys that are sending folks to the same doctor over and over and over, a procedure that typically costs $5,000, ends up costing $40,000. And the examples of that go on and on and on. And so that's one issue. The second issue that we're trying to address, and I think the bill we're going to talk about today, House Bill 19, is really just a fundamental unfairness that we're seeing in the courtroom. All we're looking for, and all this bill addresses, and we can kind of dissect it with everybody today and look forward to hearing Joe's thoughts on it. But what we're trying to do is just get a level playing field in the courtroom. And here's kind of what's happening to us in Texas, and I feel certain throughout the rest of the country, is that, you know, we have a driver that gets in an accident called a rear-end accident. And so we get a lawsuit filed against us. Well, they're going to file a lawsuit not only against the company, but also against our employee that was driving at the time. Then what they do is, instead of it being about the accident, then they start alleging all these other causes of action for negligent hiring, negligent entrustment, negligent supervision. And what they're doing with those types of causes of action is not really trying to recover anything on them. It's giving them the opportunity to use what's called the reptile theory in order to introduce a bunch of evidence during a trial not to do with the accident itself, not what caused the accident, who was at fault, what are the corresponding, you know, medical bills that, and damages that the individual that was hit had during that accident. What they're trying to do is it's a red herring. They're saying, no, instead of focusing on the accident, let's look over here. And prior to trial, we get discovery, and they're asking about every single thing about our company, how we hire every driver, how we train everybody, things that have nothing to do with the accident. And then the whole focus of the trial ends up basically an indictment on the company trying to create this sense of fear, because that's what the reptile theory is. It's trying to appeal to the primal instincts that we all have, a fight or flight, and they're fearful, and they paint this picture of trucking companies as this dangerous group of people that have been out on the highway. You should be concerned for yourself, be concerned for your family, and in turn, by inflaming the jury during these cases, instead of focusing on the accident itself, they inflame the jury, and then all of a sudden people in the jury box are making decisions not based on the facts of the case, but on this red herring issue over here about how the trucking industry is unsafe, how we're unsafe as a company. And what we hope to accomplish with House Bill 19 is basically to split this thing in half and say, look, let's have one part of the trial where we can focus on the accident itself, what caused the accident. Was it the cause of the driver, or was it a combination of both the truck driver and the person driving the other vehicle? And then if it was the fault of the driver, then let's determine what the compensatory damages are for that individual. Let's make them whole.
Right. Adam, Ron Kane has a really good question right now. It says, why isn't the company's hiring and training process relevant to an accident?
It absolutely is. Absolutely, it is important because we believe that bad actors should be punished. And that's the whole point, is we're going to split this trial into two parts. The first part of the trial, we're going to talk about the accident itself. And we're going to talk about who caused it and what are the resulting damages. Then we're going to move on to a second part of the trial. And during that part of the trial, let's talk about exemplary damages. Let's talk about if we have a company that's a bad company, it's a bad actor, they have bad training processes, they're not taking care of business, they're not looking into the people they're hiring, then let's focus on that part of the facts. Let's focus on what's wrong with this company during a second phase of the trial, because when you combine the two like we have it now, all of a sudden the whole entire case is about something that has nothing to do with the accident. So that's what we're trying to do.
Wait, but you just said that hiring and training does have to do with the accident.
Hiring and training does, in terms of the accident itself, it really has nothing to do with it. If you think about it, the accident itself, you got to break it down. When you look at an accident, right, they're going to file a lawsuit against us for a rear end accident. Okay. We need to focus on who caused that accident. Was it the driver's fault? Was it some distracted driving by the passenger vehicle? Let's focus on that. And if it's the driver's fault, then let's find out what we need to do to make this person whole. You know, and then when we get to the second phase of the trial, let's talk about the company itself. The problem we have is the whole entire trial right now has nothing to do with the accident. It has everything to do with issues that are completely unrelated to the accident itself. It is painting this picture of how the trucking industry is safe. It's the same reason you have a billboard, at least every other one in Texas, have you been hit by a big truck? They're conditioning society right now to be fearful of trucking companies, thinking that we're unsafe and dangerous on the road, and they're doing the same thing in the courtroom. We need to focus on the issue that's before a jury. Look, what caused this accident? Who's at fault? How do we make this person whole? We need to focus on that. Then let's get into everything about the company. Let's talk about how this is a bad company, if they are, and frankly, most of them aren't. When you introduce a bunch of evidence, when you're asking a jury to focus on the accident, all of a sudden the issue, the waters gets muddy, and we're not focusing on what we should be in these cases, and it's resulting in verdicts that are inconsistent with the facts of the case. They're resulting in verdicts that are substantially higher than they should be, and that's what we're seeking to fix with this legislation.
I see. Joe, do you think those, you can separate the two? We'll have one trial over here about the driver and the accident, we'll stick with that. Then we'll have another trial over here about the company and their training and their hiring.
Well, that happens right now in a lot of cases, but what I would just take issue with, I mean, what a couple of things that Adam said. I mean, Adam, first of all, from my perspective, my bet is, I don't know you and you, I don't know your company, but I'm betting that you are very safety conscious and you guys go through a lot of efforts to hire reasonably safe drivers and put good equipment out there on the roadway. But let's say that's not who you were. Let's say you were one of those companies that didn't do that. And you hired somebody who was absolutely, by your own, by Adam's own admissions, if I could ever get him to admit that this guy shouldn't be a truck driver, and I probably wouldn't have to try that hard. Let's say the guy's been in 15 prior wrecks, preventables. I mean, paint the ugliest picture in the world. And now put that guy on the road and he gets in a wreck. And all the company's got to do in order to prevent the world from knowing all this crap that they just did, that they tried to get away with, is just admit that the driver's their driver, he was their employee, and he was acting within the course and scope of their employment. Is the negligence of the company not a cause of the crash at that point? It is a cause of the crash. And if you separate it out, why is the industry so afraid? Why is the industry so afraid of a jury being able to see what's beneath the hood, so to speak, of what they're doing? And shouldn't the effort here be, at least to a significant degree, let's improve the industry to a point where the industry's proud? Come look. You want to look at our practices? Come look at our practices. And you don't have to be afraid, you know, because what's happening right now, Adam, is you're a better student of the reptile than I am, because you're going to paint my whole profession as the cause for truck wrecks. Are we the cause of truck wrecks? I don't think so. Is there abuse in the industry? Sure, there is abuse in every industry. But I think I'm not doing a great job explaining what I'm trying to say here. But as I understand the process that's being projected, that this legislation is trying to create, is one that will create a way for trucking companies to hide, to prevent the world from being able to see what's really going on within the company. You'll have to seek a court order before you can even get into a company's background. And it's just not appropriate. And I don't think it's going to pass, because I don't think that at the end of the day, even the people in the industry really think it's appropriate. I think this is a beginning point for a discussion on what ultimately will pass. Some kind of reforms may be appropriate, but this is not really where the industry wants to go.
Adam, before you respond, I want to hear what Dee has to say on this topic and what she's been seeing, because I'm sure you have seen a lot with all your clients, Dee.
Yes. And I think to both Joe and Adam's point, there is truth to both sides. And we do have some insureds where their back house is terrible. Their hiring practices are awful. They're trying to push through drivers that the insurance is denying, much less the agent. And they know that the driver should not be on there. But you do have some trucking companies that do put everything in place, and these drivers do kind of just act on their own volition. And we have one example, this one company where he does drug tests every 30 days. One of his drivers just got into an accident where he killed a pedestrian because he was high. And the whole time the owner was under the impression that this driver was clean and he was finding ways around the system. So I don't think it's always in the best interest to condemn the company when these drivers do have their own minds, and they should be responsible as well.
That's a really good point too, because Joe, I can see your points, I can see Adam's points, but I will tell you that sometimes when I consult trucking companies and logistics companies and shippers, there's such a thing of you have too much data, or you're going above and beyond what you don't want to. This is going to hurt you in this type of litigation.
I see that raised all the time, like when you talk about dash cams. Should you have them? Should you not have them? You know, I mean, what kind of data do you want to keep? Because look, the data is the data. It's either going to help you or it's going to hurt you.
Yeah, for sure.
The problem we have is that during the course of these lawsuits, and really this bill is really to solve one major issue, and that is abusive litigation tactics that we're seeing against us in the industry. And so, you know, we can get, and it's funny, this conversation is going to end up getting pulled in the same direction they want the conversation to be pulled in these lawsuits that we're in with them and in trial. They want it not to be about, you know, the accident, the cause of the accident. They want it to be about the industry and these unsafe practices that in real times don't have anything at all to do with the accident itself. I'll give you an example. When you are looking at one of these cases, you're going to end up getting a whole bunch of discovery requests, and they're going to ask you about it, how you've hired everybody that you've hired. They want all your BOLs for all your loads. They want, you know, the personnel files of all the truck drivers you have. They want all of the vehicle maintenance records for every piece of equipment you have. And they're going to look through that pile of information and try to find one thing they can hang their hat on that they can bring up to the jury and say, look, this is an unsafe company. You should be fearful for your safety and the safety of your loved ones. Don't look at this lawsuit over here. Don't look at this rear end accident, even though a lot of times the evidence they're introducing about the company has nothing to do with that driver or that piece of equipment. They want to say, look over here. This is a truly unsafe company. We gotta hold them responsible. We need to hammer them. We need a big verdict against these guys. And so we're losing complete perspective about what the trial process is and what the purpose of the trial is. And the purpose of that trial is to evaluate the facts of that accident, see who's at fault, and how can we make the person whole that was injured in that accident. And really, it's easy to get, you know, taken down these different rabbit holes when in reality, it is these practices that have been used by these trial lawyers over and over and over the years that has resulted in this litigation, because we end up getting in lawsuits over literally nothing. I mean, we've had an accident one time where we had a lane change. The spokes on the tire, you know, did very little damage to the back driver's side door of this car. Both the truck and the trailer pull off the side of the road. No ambulance is called. No police are called. No emergency personnel whatsoever. Our driver takes a selfie with the driver of that vehicle, and they both leave the scene. Next thing you know, I get a lawsuit against me, and they have $60,000-$70,000 in medical bills in that case. And I mean, for what? That the problem is when you get these day in and day out claims where they're running up these medical bills for procedures that cost, you know, with our insurance, $5,000, $10,000, and all of a sudden they're $60,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000, and the insurance companies are paying those out. The companies are having to pay those out. Well, all of a sudden the price of everything's going to go up. And I mean, our company is a mid-sized trucking company. We pay about $1 million a year in insurance. So when you see these constant increases, even for good, safe companies, of 20, 30, 40% every year. I mean, we're talking about $200,000 or $300,000, $400,000 a year for us. And the problem it's having is it inhibits our ability to invest in people, invest in equipment, invest in our communities. And so all we're doing is we're lining the pockets of a lot of these attorneys. And granted, I know Joe's a good attorney, and this is no indictment on him, and there's plenty of good ones out there. But the bottom line is, there are a tremendous number of frivolous lawsuits, and it's because of that that this kind of legislation is coming to be, because we got to fix the problem. We got to.
Adam, I have a question for you. Is there, why do you think Texas is the state with the most litigation, or one of the states with most trucking litigation?
I think it's because we have probably the most trucking companies. I mean, I don't know the exact statistics on the number of trucking companies state by state, but I know for certain that we have the most road miles, the most miles of road of any state in the country. I mean, if you look at the numbers, we have 680,000 miles of roadway. You know, the next one behind that's California with 395.
I think it's just like naturally, you're a big state, you've got a lot of trucking companies running, 100%. And so it's just naturally that they're going to be accidents.
It's huge. It's port. There's ports. It's huge. I mean, just the sheer geography. But Adam, some of the stuff you said, I mean, I with due respect, it doesn't happen that way. I've litigated cases in over 40 states. I'm probably the author of some of these tactics that you're talking about. And I've never seen a case, a single one, and I would challenge you to bring me one that shows that where a judge has allowed a plaintiff's lawyer to go and get every maintenance record from every truck some company has, or every driver's personnel file for a company. That does not happen in cases. What happens is it gets limited to the driver. It gets limited to the equipment. The only time it goes beyond that is when a lawyer is able to show a big systemic problem or the appearance of a systemic problem, and then there's a fight in front of a judge, and the judge dictates what is and is not going to be allowed. And so it's what you're calling abuse, I just don't see it. It doesn't happen. Now, and I would venture to say that you're not really, your association is not really all that concerned about that case where your lug nuts caused some minor damage to a car. Those aren't the ones that you're getting hurt on. The ones you're getting hurt on are major damage cases, and people are tired of the bad safety side of things. And that's not, I am not anti-trucking. And everybody who knows me knows that that's true. I represent a lot of truck drivers in truck-on-truck crashes. You know, I view myself very much as a safety advocate in this arena. And I want what is best from a safety perspective. I'm against dangerous practices. But what you're describing, it's great rhetoric, but it does not happen in the real world. Now, are there some abuses? Are there some things about medical bills being high and all those kind of things? I think the answer to that is yes. I don't defend that. I don't endorse that. I don't think it's 100%. I don't think the fingers get pointed necessarily in the exactly right places. But, you know, in situations like that, those things need to be addressed in a fair way. But when it comes to stopping people from being able to look behind the curtain of a trucking company, just like they can look behind the curtain of every other kind of industry that's out there. You sue a hospital, guess what? People are looking at your personnel records. They're looking to see if you're following your practices or procedures. It's the way it is. You sue a manufacturer, you look and see. You know how those industries deal with it? They improve their systems, and they improve their abilities, and the insurance companies get involved, and they help them do it, just like is happening right now in the trucking world. Insurers are taking a very active role in a lot of trucking businesses in helping them improve. Industry specialists like JJ Keller, like Brendan, I think is on here somewhere who runs a company to try to help. There's a whole industry of companies who are out there trying to help the trucking companies be more compliant. What do you think would happen if somebody comes in and kicks the tires and they see that everything's being done right? Suddenly, it's not only not scary, but who looks like the bad person then? Maybe the person in my industry looks like I'm being the bad person at that point. So I would love for you to put me out of business, Adam. I would love for you and the industry to get better and better over time so that when you get somebody who says, let me look behind the curtain, let me open that filing cabinet and look at the compliance behind this company, it comes back and it's good. Wow, what a concept. Let's improve the industry. How about that?
Well, here's what I would say to that, Joe, is the problem is you would like us to put you out of business. You are putting us out of business. And I would say to you, with all due respect, that when we have an accident, we have a plaintiff going to the same, these individuals going to the same lawyers for the same doctors time in and time out, and we've got medical bills that typically cost $5,000 through our private insurance end up being $60,000, you know, as represented to our insurance companies and to juries. And
Adam,
then what's interesting to me
is, I missed in the bill, was there anything that talks about these medical bills that you're talking about to help?
There's a second bill that we have filed, that this House Bill 1617, Senate Bill 207. So we have two different bills that are addressing both these issues. And so that one's going to be coming up next. But I think it's important to note, you know, during the course of this discussion, because what everybody needs to understand is that $60,000 in medical bills, this is what these attorneys are doing for the most part. They're agreeing with the doctor that they don't have to get paid until the case is over with and they get paid. And then they'll go back to the doctor and say, hey, instead of paying you 60, I'll pay you 20. And 20 goes to the lawyer and 20 goes to the client.
Adam, you're talking about like a small percentage of attorneys, because I've litigated all over the country. I know all of these plaintiff attorneys and I've seen tons of cases. I've seen that maybe in, 1% of my cases.
It's a lot more than you think. It happens way more than you think. When you're actually filing these claims and it goes in as one way and it comes out as an $80,000 like claim, and the insured has no idea that it even got that bad because they were in good terms when they walked away from the accident, and they look at their lost runs and now their renewal is sky high and they can't afford it and now they're out of business.
People on my side won't like me saying it, but I don't disagree that there's some issues here in this area. And I think, I'm about exposure. Let's shine the light on wherever it needs to be. And you know, if that's a problem, then that ought to be addressed in so that some transparency gets brought into that side of things so that people can see it and reach appropriate decisions based on it. But I'll tell you, I think it's a little bit more complicated. There are definitely people in my field who are doing things that I don't endorse when it comes to the medical side, but there also are very, very tough situations where people can't really afford to go and get medical care in a normal way, they're uninsured, and they end up with lean type bases. And they're from a medical perspective, I think if I'm in that business, I'm looking at it and saying, I'm taking a risk doing this procedure. I may or may not get paid. There's going to be a certain number of times I don't get paid. I've got to factor that in. So it's a more complex issue than I think we're talking about. But at the same time, whatever it is, it needs to have the light shined on it. And if that's a bad practice on my side, then by God, point the light at our side and point it out.
Dee, how much does it cost right now to get for a small trucking company to get insurance? What's like the ballpark?
So are we talking like new ventures? Are we talking like an established MC? Because the prices kind of differ.
Whatever you feel like we should know about.
Okay, so it all depends on where they're actually garaged as well. So you are going to see substantially higher prices in Texas than in, I don't know, like Utah. So this is a huge deal for truckers. I think a lot of people are saying that it may increase rates. I don't necessarily think that's true. The only thing that insurance companies are concerned about really is the lost runs. If their lost runs aren't being attacked and riddled with all of these frivolous lawsuits, obviously the prices are going to come down. So I do see where this bill could be flawed, but I do see it as the first step in overall, like, just fixing the whole problem, because this is crazy. Like, having all of these lawsuits, like, I think litigation went up like 118% over like the last 4 or 5 years. Like, that's insane. We have to actually protect our businesses. Like, these owners aren't like just truckers, their dads, their husbands, like they have people to provide for. We can't just attack their businesses because one driver went broke.
I was thinking about something similar. Obviously I feel like when we have these shows, sometimes we focus so much on the law, the litigation, and the big verdicts. But what's been going on in the industry with regards to safety? So Adam, with your group, you talk so much about this litigation. Has like Texas passed any trucking safety laws like that are similar to this? Because this is extensive. The one, at least 19 that I'm looking at, it's like intense. And then I was like, wow, if only they had a law proposed like this with safety. Oh, is he muted? Oh, whoops. Sorry, that might have been me.
No problem. We already have. I mean, look, we had the ELD mandate that came out. You know, now everybody has electronic logging devices in every single one of their trucks to ensure that they are keeping the hours of service requirements that are issued by the
government. How do you want a state level?
Well, I don't. Here's the thing: is we are so heavily regulated by the FMCSA. There are already so many standards and requirements that we have. You know, we have certain requirements as to how we have to hire every driver. We have requirements as to drug testing. I mean, we are heavily regulated. There are a ton of requirements that we have every day and have had for years. And I think that one thing that I would note with the ELD mandate is that, you know, it created a huge proliferation in technology in our industry and was a blessing and a curse, right? It's had some impact.
How many people don't follow the law?
Well, I would agree with you there that there are some that don't, but I would represent that most of them do. I mean, the bottom line is that if you have an unsafe trucking company, that is having, and an unsafe trucking company is going to have a lot of accidents, and they're going to end up with a lot of severe accidents. Insurance companies are going to put them out of business because they won't write their insurance. That's the first thing. I mean, and with this proliferation of technology, we're seeing most trucks with cameras now. We're seeing, you know, with ELDs, we are following, you know, all the guidelines that are set both at the state and federal level that are ensuring that our roads are safe.
Well, and when what you're saying is that you're regulated enough. You don't need any more. You don't need any more laws with safety. Do you feel like there's enough laws with safety and you don't need any more? I guess is my question.
I think there's always room for improvement. Could I sit here right now with you, Cassandra, and say, look, I think we should do this or we should not do that? I'm not hearing of much out there with folks saying, look, we need to be requiring them to do more. If it's something that we think is going to make the industry better, I'd love to sit down and talk with them, and I'll support things that will make us better as an industry. And the bottom line is that this bill itself, House Bill 19, is not prohibiting anybody from being able to get personnel records for drivers. It's not inhibiting anybody from being able to get the vehicle maintenance records for these trucks. They can look under the hood. They can look at these drivers. They can look at the company. All we're asking is
you're limiting the time range, right? So I was looking at this a little bit and I saw a lot of things that talked about 2 years. So limiting, let's see, the defendant's failure to comply with the standard of regulation, to get a court order and then not to exceed 2 years. So is 2 years, do you feel that, like, if they have problems beyond 2 years, that it's irrelevant to the accident? Is that where that's coming from?
It's coming from the fact that these trial lawyers so often are looking at the entire history of a driver that's been driving for 30 years. I mean, if a driver has some kind of a motor, some type of a traffic violation 10 years ago, what does that have to do with the accident that happened today?
Joe, do you get records and bring them into court talking about a driver's violation from 10 years ago?
Well, under very limited circumstances. I mean, but here, you know, the first thing that I would answer is, Adam, do you want your company to be able to talk about the history of your company for longer than 2 years, how safe it's been, all these efforts that you're talking about it's gone through and the history that it has? Because if you want that, then I ought to be able to counteract that. It's not as simple as just one sided or the other side. I mean, the reality is right now in every state in the United States, there are procedures in place. If a company feels that they are being improperly targeted, if they feel like the amount of discovery that's being requested is overly broad, if they feel like it's not proportional to the lawsuit, there are mechanisms already in place right now where they go before the court, they file an objection, they go before the court, and a judge has to make a determination in a case-by-case basis, based on the rules of evidence, what can and can't be gone after. And there's protections that are granted all the time where it's appropriate. There are also times when it's left wide open where a court thinks that that's an appropriate inquiry. And, you know, it's hard to talk in the abstract because not every case is the same. And I look at the industry that we're dealing with. It's not, we go from, you know, single owner operator scenarios all the way up to companies with over 10,000, you know, power units and drivers out there. It's not really homogeneous. And, you know, Adam, the reality is there's huge discussions about what can and should be improved right now. I mean, the Trucking Alliance, which we support, you know, as a safety organization, come beside them. You know, we're all talking about continued improvements. We're talking about lane departure warning issues. We're talking about forward collision and mitigation avoidance technology. We're talking about all these things that are designed to avoid and minimize crashes. And I think that you would support those things, like you said you would. So at the end of the day, if we focus on this particular bill, I think you're overreaching. That's my feeling. I think that to the degree that you think that something is inappropriate, bring that specifically. But to talk about these broad ranging things and to point and say nuclear verdicts, you know, every nuclear verdict I know of, and I keep track of most of them, if not all of them, there's some pretty darn good facts in there to support the reason why it's there. And I'd welcome a discussion with anybody at any point in time about ones that they think were so far out of whack that they support this total game changer when it comes to litigation for this one specific industry that you guys feel like you're so targeted in? It's just, I just don't see it.
Here's the problem, is that this bill is not a huge departure from a lot of the law that we already have in the state of Texas. We can already bifurcate trials. We can already split them into two parts. The only difference we have here is when we're talking about exemplary damages, right? Punitive damages, we're just going to move the facts of it into the second part instead of just the damage component of it. That already exists today in Chapter 41 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code. I mean, this is not a huge departure from the law as it stands today. And this is not a huge limitation on the ability for anybody to look under the hood and to hold companies accountable that are unsafe and bad actors out there. It has no inhibiting factor on anybody's ability to file a lawsuit, the amount of damages that they can be awarded, in the introduction of evidence within reason. There are some limitations on, you know, specifically on the look back that we have there in terms of their violations for traffic violations or FMCSA violations. But the problem is, Joe, as we get into a courtroom and we're talking about issues 10 years ago with this driver and other drivers, it has really nothing to do. We got a rear end accident. We've got a guy, we're talking about how he had an illegal, you know, he had an improper lane change violation 6 years ago. I mean, what does that have to do with the lawsuit itself? Nothing. But what it's doing is trying to paint a picture of how, look, this is a bad industry. You need to be scared of them. And in reality, that's not the case. We need to create an environment where a jury can focus on the facts of the case, where they can focus on what happened there, who was at fault, how do we make this person whole?
Here's where you and I disagree. Here's where I think we're having our disagreement. I think we're having a disagreement as to what we would consider, what you would consider and what I would consider causally related to the crash. To me, I agree with you. If you say there's an isolated incident 6 years ago with this driver failed to maintain a lane, big whooping, you know what? I mean, you know, giant scope of things. But if that's part of a pattern or practice of the driver, and it's not only 6 years ago, but there's one 6 years ago, there's one 5 years ago, there's three 4 years ago, there's two 1 year ago, why should it be restricted so that you can only go back and pick up, you know, exactly 2 years and 1 day ago, there was a terrible situation that happened. Why should that get excluded if it's part of a pattern or practice? If it's not part of a pattern or practice, it's not related. And good lawyers aren't going to even go after that. So I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think you have to look at systemic issues within a company. I teach that. I'm proud to teach that. I'll stand up in front of everybody who wants to criticize me and say that as a person who cares about safety, I want to look under the hood of a company and see if it's a compliant company. I want to see if there are issues having to do with hiring, supervision, training, maintenance, all those kind of things that did contribute to this situation occurring. If they didn't contribute to the situation, I don't see that as really the problem, because those cases show me a case where a bunch of stuff that had nothing to do with the crash actually came into evidence. Show it to me. I mean, I know people want to talk about it all the time. Show it to me. I've not seen it. And it's what I do. I litigate cases and I'm involved in a lot of them myself. And obviously I'm the litigator in a lot of them. And I also teach this all over the country. It doesn't happen that way. Now there are certainly going to be times when people look under the hood and ask for it in discovery, but does that stuff get put into evidence later?
Absolutely.
Rarely, if ever. I would challenge somebody to show me the case where it comes in that it's not related. Because if it's not related, the law says it doesn't come in.
So the bill is obviously flawed in some ways, but they are rewriting it. And I think it kind of takes away from the heart of the bill is trying to figure out who's actually negligent for this accident. I think that's one thing that could be taken into editing a bit, but a lot of what is here could help the owner. And if you're arguing on behalf of a clean business, that's fine. But a lot of people don't do that. So I think this gives the owner a fighting chance of actually defending themselves properly in court versus being painted out just to be the big bad truck.
Dee, can I tell you what frustrates me is I feel as though this is a bit of a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And what is going on here is that both Joe's industry and Adam's industry have bottom feeders, and they have a big bottom feeder problem. Joe, I've been stuck in those lawsuits with some peers that you probably don't even know, and there's a lot of bottom feeder plaintiff attorneys, and they do go on a searching expedition looking for whatever they can to create this story, and the truckers lose. They always lose with this story. I just settle the cases because often I'm like, nobody's going to believe us because we're trucking.
And that's a part of the reptile theory that Adam was speaking about earlier. Like, they do like conferences in Vegas about this, like teaching people how to like attack these truckers in that way. And I do get that some of them are unsafe and those people should be penalized. But for the everyday company that's just trying to make it, I don't think they should be getting these astronomical rates. Just
well, because. The thing is, though, is that the bottom feeders are playing into that, D.
Yeah. You
still have people who are getting drunk and getting behind the wheel.
Yeah.
Still have assholes that are watching porn and rear-ending people in construction zones. We still have serious bottom feeder problems that these groups, why aren't we putting, like, for example,
there should be a compliance piece in the middle of both of them. Like, something where there's some type of law on, like, being able to not push a driver through that only has 19 months of experience, or
or hair
actually regulating how they're hiring and making that a law and not just a requirement that may or may not get checked by the FMCSA depending on how they feel or what state you're in.
I love that.
Here's the problem. Here's what I think we're missing the point a little bit. Now, I will say, absent the 2-year look back on, you know, legal and regulatory violations by these drivers, other than that limitation, there is nothing in this bill that is prohibiting any of these attorneys from introducing the same evidence, if it were to be passed, as they introduce before it was passed. The only difference is when they get to introduce it, so that we can focus on the facts of the case at one time, and we can focus on trucking companies that are unsafe at a different time. There's nothing that's prohibiting any evidence from coming in that already isn't. It's just a matter of
what. Yeah, but Adam, my point is you're trying to put a Band-Aid on, hey, don't keep looking for things that we did wrong. We don't want you to look anymore beyond 2 years of what we've done wrong. But you're not addressing the root cause, which is we have a lot of assholes that are still getting behind the wheel that shouldn't even be behind the wheel, ever. And they're causing accidents, and they're jerking up the rates, and they're causing nuclear verdicts. Not you, Adam. You're not those assholes. The people you know are not those assholes. But what are we doing about that?
Well, I think, Cassandra, I appreciate your point, but I think that is a little bit unfounded. Yeah, sure. Our industry, like all industries, has some bad actors. We have drivers that shouldn't be behind the wheel. But I would represent to you that the majority, if not it, substantially all of our drivers are good drivers. They're good companies, good drivers. Yeah, there's some bad actors out there.
When I say bottom feeders, I mean like in the bell curve, they're the bottom like 5 to 10%.
Sure. And the good news is
causing the really bad accidents, like they're killing people and da 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 da. That all of our industry and Joe's, the two of you, I'm surprised you haven't talked about a bill like this together and made some exchanges and kind of collaborated so that both of you, Joe knows what the bottom feeders in his industry does. You know the bottom feeders of what your industry does. I mean, shit, Adam, if you're going to argue that you don't have bottom feeders, all we have to do is Google trucking accident and we can see a bunch of morons causing accidents. It's not hot.
Yeah, I'm not here to say we don't have bottom feeders. Everybody does, right? That's what I was saying. The problem is the way that these trial attorneys are operating on these cases day in and day out, whether it's a bottom feeder or a good company, it's pulling all of us down. And they're killing all of us in our insurance rates. I mean, you think about it. You hear all these statistics, right? I mean, we had in 2019, the total crashes in the state of Texas is 560,000. You know, 7% of those are with commercial motor vehicles. You know, you have 3,610 fatalities. You know, 613 of those are with commercial motor vehicles. You know, every life matters, certainly. But the bottom line is that you hear all these statistics on these commercials, and you hear about all these things on these commercials. Have you been hit by a big truck? You know, all these nuclear verdicts. You know, they're conditioning everybody to think that a jury verdict of $50 million is totally normal and understandable, and it's killing us. It's killing us. It's killing D and M. I mean, she can speak to that.
That's actually a good point. D, what were you about to say? I'm sorry.
So I was just going to attest to the point that that is true. And a lot of people don't know how to even drive around a truck. That gap you're jumping in is where he needs to stop. So I think even just educating the general public or putting some money towards that would even help. But we can't just like try to put a Band-Aid on the end result of an already bad situation. We got to try to find a way to prevent it or educate people so it doesn't necessarily happen. And we can overall fix the whole problem. And that's some of it.
And I don't think this is a Band-Aid on a bullet hole by any means either, Dee. I mean, and to your point, Cassandra, I mean, here's the problem. We have a major, major, major issue, and it is driven by this incredible proliferation. It's a huge increase in litigation in our industry. We got to start somewhere, and where better to start than right here. We're not taking any rights from anybody away from access to the court system. We're not taking anything away from anybody's ability to recover damages from being injured. We're not limiting whatsoever the amount of damages that people can receive for punitive damages to punish bad companies. This bill does not take away any rights that anybody has in a court in the state of Texas. It just has the only thing it has to do with is when do we get to hear about it so that we have a level playing field. We're going in there against these guys and they're not introducing evidence and focusing on the actual issue at hand, which is the accident. They're focusing on everything other than that to try to paint a picture of our company and our industry being unsafe, and you need to punish them not only for on the first part of the trial when you're talking about the cause of the accident, but then when we get over to the punitive damages when we actually should be talking about it.
Yeah.
Joe, you've been awfully quiet.
Well, I'm listening because I see the frustration. I hear it in Adam's voice, and it bothers me to hear that frustration. Part of it, I think what's bothering me is, you know, Dee, just so that you know, both sides hold seminars in Vegas to teach their people how to do things. I've spoken at both sides. I've spoken at the Defense Research Institute programs. I've spoken at the American Trucking Association programs, and I've spoken and taught at and run many for plaintiffs. So it's not fair to just say we're out there teaching people how to do our job. That we are. We're doing it. And I'll tell you what, I think the industry is better off for, as a general rule, I started in this line of work 17 years ago, and I was one of the first people in the United States to dedicate my practice to only commercial motor vehicle cases. And I think the trucking industry is safer today than it was 17 years ago, in large part because myself and Michael Leiserman, who I see on the call, and several others, have made it a dedicated practice to try to force that to happen. The industry was doing a terrible job at policing itself. And I think everybody in the industry who is a safety person would agree with that. Yeah. They're doing a better job today than they ever have. And the safety conscious companies are banding together and actually doing work side by side with safety advocates around the country to bring the industry up. I'm tickled pink by that. It makes my heart sing to see people coming together to try to make us safer. And by the way, folks, sit with a truck driver who because of practices that they were forced into by a piece of crap company. And I say that, I don't say that lightly, because most companies I think do try hard, but there are some that abuse the hell out of their people and they put them out there. And these are men and women who are just trying to earn a living and put bread on the table for their families. And they sit with them when they're responsible for the death of an entire family. Sit with them and see what it's like for them and start talking to them about what they were forced into doing. And I'm not talking about the ones who are pointing a finger just for the hell of it. I'm talking about the ones where you find out about the systemic things that were happening at the company and it makes you freaking pissed. I mean, I'm getting pissed thinking about them now. Those men and women for the rest of their lives have to sit there and think about the consequences. First of all, they're never driving again, so they've got those consequences. And then they have to think about what the ramifications are of what happened. There are lots of folks within this industry who are getting abused. And some of the things that we're talking about now affect those people too. Not only because on the side, not only from the perspective of there are too many lawsuits, but from the perspective that we need, I'm not, I guess here's what I'm trying to say, and I'm rambling. I'm not going to sit here and defend everything that plaintiff's lawyers do. I cringe at a lot of the stuff that I see out there. I don't like it. Anything that's not credible and appropriate and literally white hat tactics, I'm going to be against. You're not going to have a, you're going to have an advocate for you on those sides, but you're not going to have me sit here and defend any bad practices. And I'm against any artificial practice that's going to prevent light from being shined behind the scenes of a company so that I can see and I can report back to the family of somebody who's maimed forever or dead and has huge needs to understand why the hell something like this continues to happen in today's day and age. I need to be able to give them those answers. And what I and I'll be the first one to tell you, when I look at a company, and there are lots of people who will support me, who would get on this call and say, I've done exactly what I'm about to say, when it's appropriate. When I look and I say, yes, they were doing things right. I see it. I'm the first one to praise them. Thank you for doing it right. And I look for opportunities to elevate them in the safety world with my brothers and sisters who are on my side. And I know I'm not alone in that. So we've got problems on our side too, but we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. And I think that preventing the observation behind the scenes is the wrong way to go about doing it. And that's my perspective.
And Joe, I appreciate
it. If it were to be edited, how would you feel about it then? Because there is a lot of good stuff here. I could see your point, but I don't think we should throw the whole bill out. I just think that one little point could be tweaked a little to be worded differently, because it's not stopping you from getting that information. It's just prolonging it.
That's right. That's the point, is we are not, this bill does not limit anybody up with the exception of the 2-year look back for regulatory, traffic law type violations. They can still get the access to the same information that they need. They can still try their cases, they can still have access to the same courts they do today. They can still get the same damages that they get today. All we're talking about is, look, give us a fair chance when we're talking about the accident. Let's just talk about the accident. I think our discussion here is a perfect example of that. This whole entire discussion has kind of digressed in a certain degree about the bad actors, the bottom feeders, the issues there, right? This is the same thing that happens to us in a courtroom. Let's not focus on that. Let's focus on the courtroom. Let us focus on the accident itself, and this bill itself does not limit anybody's access to the court system. It does not limit anybody's ability to introduce evidence. It's just a matter of when you get to introduce it. And I understand the one exception is the 2-year look back on the regulatory violations. But other than that, nothing changes from people's ability to be made whole and to punish bad companies that shouldn't be on the road.
If anything, I thought the part about like having to prove being grossly negligent would have like kind of rubbed wrong. Because apparently it's like the highest standard of the law and it's so hard to prove and all this other stuff. So if anything, I kind of had a problem with that, because how do you prove gross negligence? But the rest of it looked pretty good.
And then not exceed 2 years. I don't like that. I'm with Michael, who I saw him. He said something, but like, you know what's really weird is that recently I had a friend injured in a trucking accident, a really good friend. And I want to know what the fuck that trucker's been doing the past 5 years. And if he or she had 2 years of tickets, I want to know the rest of the time frame too. This bill wouldn't allow me to do that.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of, and to your point, Cassandra, there's been a lot of discussion about expanding that look back period. And I'll tell you, I don't think you're going to have a lot of pushback from the industry. What the problem that we have is that it can't be infinite. And the way it is right now, it is infinite. And it's allowing for an infinite look back. And it is allowing for, the introduction of that evidence. We have to, if they can't regulate themselves and control themselves on how far they're going to look back and introducing evidence that's relevant to the case, then this is what happens. Then you end up with a legislature that says, look, we're going to have to limit how far you go back because you're abusing the system. And that's what we're seeing. But other than that,
you actually want to stop judges from having the ability to say what's fair and appropriate.
That's what I don't like.
So that's kind of,
yep,
not legislative. It's not me who gets to decide that question. It's a judge in a particular case who gets to decide the question. But you know, I mean, I you know, we didn't even get into the gross net side, and I may have misunderstood part of this having to do with the with what can come in and what can't come in. So if I did, I apologize on the front end of it. But you know, to me, I appreciate what you're saying. You're saying we're digressing into looking at the bad actors. What you and I disagree about is I think that if you're a company and you do a terrible job hiring, training, or supervising a driver, then by God, you, and then that driver gets in a wreck, you ought not be able to hide the shit that yes. you, and that's a technical legal term, the shit. that because you get to say, well, all you got to do is say, that's my driver. He or she was my employee, and I assume responsibility for him, which it means course and scope of employment. And then you never get to look behind the scenes, you know, beyond that, unless gross negligence.
I mean, I'm going to respectfully disagree with that, though, because you still get to introduce that evidence. It's just a matter of when in the trial process you get introduced.
Not if the judges can't do it. According to this, you can't go past 2 years. So no.
No, I'm on the 2 years, but the rest of it you can. The rest of it you can get into. And the gross negligence is the standard right now anyway for exemplary damages. So we're not changing any standards.
If you have a punitive damage case, then you do. If not,
what we're talking about. The bottom feeders is where you're going to have a punitive damage case, certainly. And you can still look under the hood. All of the evidence that y'all just talked about, the bad actors, what they have in all the skeletons buried, all that stuff can still come in. This bill does not prevent that information from coming in trials. If this bill gets passed, it's just a matter of when.
I read the statute. Unless I read it wrong, it doesn't come in unless you have a punitive damage claim. It's and which means that it will not be considered a legal cause. Your negligent hiring, supervision, training, entrustment will never be considered a cause of the primary accident in any way, shape, or form, unless you have a punitive damage claim. So at that point, you're going beyond. So that means that the driver is going to be either pegged with full responsibility or not, without the jury being able to assess any potential negligence of the trucking company. You want to apportion damages and responsibility, but not to the company itself. If the company has responsibility, why shouldn't it be appointed? Why shouldn't a jury be able to apportion responsibility there as well? And look, we just have a fundamental difference of opinion, Adam. I believe that the jury should get to analyze the conduct of the various people who are responsible. Where we agree is it should all have to be related to the crash. I can't go and show that somebody ran a red light over here and that has nothing to do with this wreck over here and put this into evidence against this. You and I will agree upon that. But if somebody's negligent hiring supervision over here is responsible for having this person on the road at that point in time, trained and operating equipment in the way that they are, that should be something that a jury, in my view, should be able to assess whether that was handled properly or not, or whether it's causally related to the crash.
But that's something that the industry has to fix as well, because when I submit a driver, they're only concerned about the last 5 years. If he ran that red light 10 years ago, I'm not going to say it. The insurance company is going to say it. And we're not able to tell the insured or disclose that information to them. So he may not ever know. He just knows his driver is approved to be added to the policy.
If they've been clean for 5 years, if they've been clean essentially for 5 years, and there's a bunch of stuff that goes back, but it goes back before 5 years, find me a judge who lets that into evidence. I'd love to be able to go try that case in front.
Well,
of
I will tell you, Joe. One time I did have a case, and I will never fucking forget this. I had a case with a driver who was a 3 million mile. I think it was a 3 or 5 or something. He said it was crazy. He had been a safe driver for 3 million miles, and a woman pulled in front of him in fucking Texas, Thomas Henry's case, and she pulled right in front of him, and he couldn't slam on the brakes in time, and he rear-ended her. And Thomas Henry's firm spent so much time looking at this man who was 65 years old. They looked at his record, but they did go back. We argued and argued and argued. I think they went back to 8 years. They do ask for 8 years of shit. And they couldn't find anything. I sat through a long deposition. He was an amazing man. So the firm decided that their strategy was going to be age because they couldn't find anything. And they were going to say because he was 65 years old, he couldn't react in time to prevent the accident that she fucking caused, by the way. So I can see Adam. I can see it. I can see that side. I have a friend who's injured. And so now I'm like viciously can see the plaintiff's side. I also see we have a lot of truck drivers out there. We have bottom feeder truck drivers. We have bottom feeder plaintiff attorneys. But I'll tell you the one thing that I think is missing in our entire industry is that these groups, I don't know if they're working together. Plaintiffs, like Adam, if you consulted with any plaintiff attorneys to see what they thought about the bill and how they could cut down on their bottom feeder problem. And like, I feel like we're not talking to each other. And because of that, we're all heading down the same path of continuous. Truckers don't want any more regulation, but they do want to cut down on plaintiff attorneys. Plaintiff attorneys over here have lots of lawsuits, and they are trying to get regulation for safety. So it's just weird.
Somebody should start.
Yeah, and I'll say that I appreciate you doing this, Cassandra, because this is a great conversation. Joe, I very much appreciated your comments. And Dee, I mean, this you're creating a platform for that discussion. We need to have more of them. And I respect Joe's position. We can agree to disagree, which we do. I mean, I think it's fair to say the 2-year look back seems to be a problem. But to Joe's point, you know, it's going to be hard pressed to find a judge that's going to let you look back more than 5 years. So maybe the 2 years needs to be 5 years, but it certainly needs to be something.
FMCSA looks, I mean, you're supposed to on your application per 391 look back 10 years. So that's not me saying it. But look, I mean, Cassandra, you're
interesting, Joe, because the FMCSA only looks at 2 years. They keep that and they consider it relevant for the safety scores and inspection.
Yeah, for safety, right. But for hiring it under 391, your application process, you know, your standard application process is a 10-year look back. But and interestingly, you know, a lot of people use the 7-year, you know, MVR look back. But at the end of the day, you know, what I was going to say in response to what you said, Cassandra, somebody should make an online metropolis for people to come and have this conversation. Somebody ought to do that. Does anybody on this call think they know anybody who could maybe, you know, create some kind of a virtual world where we could come together?
I see why he's my favorite.
Well, and the beauty is that our system of governance is doing that right now. We're doing this in Austin. You know, I sat earlier this week, spoke before the committee that this was in front of, and there were folks from both sides that came and spoke on this issue. And I respect their opinion. I may not agree with it. I respect Joe's opinion. I respect Dee's. Same with you, Cassandra, and all the rest of your guests. I mean, we want to be better as an industry. We just need some help. And we believe that this is a step in the right direction of making this a level playing field. But we certainly know that we can get better. I think Joe would admit that folks on his side can get better. And I look forward to the opportunity to continue this discussion and this debate so that we can all grow together and be better as an industry.
I love it. I think that's a great conclusion. Dee, you're the last one. Do you have anything you'd like to tell your clients? Any last final thoughts before we go?
Be safe. hire drivers with experience. Make sure that you guys keep your 10 feet away from those cars. And if you can, put cameras everywhere. So
I love it. I love it.
I'm a big advocate for the cameras, too.
Me too.
I mean, cameras don't lie.
Yeah.
I've said no to a whole lot of people ask me this all the time. I've said no to a lot of lawsuits when I've seen the camera and seen the facts.
Mm-hmm. Saves a lot of time and money.
The cameras just say what the cameras say. They don't have an opinion. They just have a fact. And so I'm a big proponent for them.
Unless you're Thomas Henry and my driver's 65 years old.
Poor Thomas.
I'm just saying. I'm going to kick his ass one day. Anyhow, okay, guys, I will see you next Friday. Have a great weekend. Thank you for joining us on Mad Gains Live. Thank you to our sponsors, JD Keller, OTR, and Swan Lee.